Welcome to Indie Film Weekly. It's March 29th, 2016. I'm Liz Nord, Editor-in-Chief of No Film School.
And I'm Ryan Koo, founder of No Film School.
On this week's show, you'll hear about Robert De Niro's decision to pull a controversial film from the Tribeca Film Fest lineup, Netflix and the Weinstein Company rallying against anti-gay legislation in Georgia, and, of course, new tools, film releases, and upcoming deadlines that you may have missed when you were busy making films.
So we are recording this in downtown Brooklyn in our podcast booth. Our desks at No Film School are nearby, and we actually are looking for an additional desk to add to that, or actually, a desk is the wrong word. We're looking to add an additional person to our desk situation. So if you are listening to this and you know cameras and post-production, including editing, visual effects, and you can write about those topics, we are very interested. We're hiring a technology editor and video director at No Film School. So if this describes you, give us an email at jobs@nofilmschool.com. Please use video in the subject line. This is a full-time salaried position working here in Brooklyn, New York, with the rest of our new hires, John, Emily, and Liz.
Come work with us. Yay! Keeping locally, but a little bit outside of our own desks. Some big news came up this past week related to one of our most reputable local film festivals, Tribeca, which we will be covering in depth once it starts in a few weeks. Pretty interesting story about a film programmed in the festival called Vaxxed, From Cover-Up to Catastrophe.
So Vaxxed is a controversial documentary because it allegedly perpetuates the idea that the CDC has been covering up data that shows a link between the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine and autism.
Part of the reason it's so controversial is that the film itself is directed by the former doctor from the UK who first published the study that got this rumor started. Since he published the study, the notion has been debunked. The British Medical Journal called it an elaborate fraud, and his medical license was revoked. After all that, he made this film, and then De Niro programmed it. Now, De Niro's own son is autistic. And part of the reason that he programmed the film despite some early protests was that he thought it would be a good conversation starter about an issue that was personal to him and his family.
There was a lot of response to this programming in the filmmaking community, including by filmmaker Penny Lane, whose film Nuts premiered at Sundance and we've covered on No Film School several times. Her open letter to Tribeca included the following. While it is true that we documentary filmmakers constantly debate vexing questions about the perceived and real differences between our work and the work of traditional journalism, I assure you that we are not debating whether it is okay to knowingly spread dangerous lies. In other words, issues around truth and ethics in documentary can get thorny, but this one should have been easy. The anti-vaccination hoax has been completely discredited by now. The film is not some sort of disinterested investigation into the vaccines cause autism hoax. This film is directed by the person who perpetuated the hoax.
So I'm a documentary filmmaker myself, and what Penny said really resonated with me. What's really at stake here and what's really out there is this censorship. De Niro decided to pull the film, and this news came out yesterday. It's the first I've heard of in my filmmaking career of a festival taking a film off the program. And the question of whether this is censorship or not, you know, it really touches a nerve with filmmakers. In this case, you know, Penny was right. Censorship is when the government puts the kibosh on information that they don't want to reach the public. In this case, Tribeca is a private institution, and they made a choice to not show the film. And I think, you know, people come to Tribeca. They're particularly known for their documentary programming. And even as a documentary filmmaker, I look at their programs and assume that because a film is programmed at Tribeca, it has a certain credibility. And so by programming it, in a way, they're giving a sort of approval to this guy's theories. And the truth is that measles cases actually went up after his initial studies were released and people died. So this is serious stuff. And I think it couldn't have been an easy decision on behalf of Tribeca. And I really admire Penny Lane for speaking out when this could affect her career. But I think they made the right choice. What do you think, Ryan?
I just enjoy watching the language that's used on social media around these things. I saw Penny at one point post someone's comment saying, how could you believe some person who's using the screen name Penny Lane? And of course, she's named after the famous song, so that's her real name. And someone is accusing her of pulling off a hoax herself with her actual legal name.
Well, it's not the only story this week about filmmakers getting involved in politics and kind of bigger issues. I don't know if you guys have been hearing lately, a lot of sort of insidious anti-LGBT legislation has been creeping up all around the country. And one such case, Georgia lawmakers were looking at a law called HB 757 that was being framed as a religious freedom legislation. But what it actually meant is it gave religious organizations the freedom to deny services to and jobs to LGBT and trans people. While this was on the table, some major media companies came out against it and basically threatened to pull production from Georgia if the law were to pass. So I'm talking Disney, Netflix, the Weinstein Company, they all threatened to boycott Georgia. And this is a big deal because Georgia worked for several years to get really, really good film incentives for films to shoot in the state, including like up to a 30% tax incentive. So one of the statistics I saw was that from July 2014 to June 2015, so in that year, there were 248 feature film and TV productions in Georgia, and the economic impact was $6 billion. So for these companies to threaten to pull out was a big deal, and actually it made the change. It moved the needle. So the news today was that Republican Governor Nathan Deal announced that he would veto the law. So.
And actually, Georgia's tax credit had gotten so popular that in many ways it's harder to film in Georgia now because of the availability of crew. It's just so hard to get a full crew on your set if you're not a huge movie. So speaking of Georgia, this wasn't something that was the state's fault and is not actually something that took place there, but it has just come out that the director of the feature film Midnight Rider, Randall Miller, was freed from jail in a very surprising ruling. Now, if you're not familiar with the story, Midnight Rider was the production on which the camera assistant, 27-year-old Sarah Jones, lost her life in February 2014. That feature was filming in Georgia at the time, and according to investigators, the film crew was denied access to a train trestle where they were looking to film. They decided to try to steal the shot on live tracks, and a train showed up and plowed through the set, seriously injuring several crew members, and Sarah lost her life as a result. So the director, Randall Miller, pled guilty to criminal trespassing and involuntary manslaughter, along with the UPM and the first AD. The director was the only one of the three to be incarcerated, but apparently the attorneys made a hallway deal called a two-for-one, and now that 1 year is up, he's been released. All three of them, the director, UPM, and AD, are serving a 10-year probation wherein they are essentially banned from working on film sets. Now, nothing could make up for the loss of a human life, but Sarah's death did bring up a lot of honest conversations and social media activity about the kinds of long hours and the dangerous conditions that many of us work in indie film. And as a result, there's now a set safety app available by the organization Pledge to Sarah. It lists answers to questions about what to do in unsafe situations. It lists the numbers for the DGA and SAG safety hotlines, and you can go right now on iOS and Android to get the set safety app.
It's such a sad story, but it's interesting. There seems to be a theme in our show today of filmmakers taking actions that result in hopefully things being better in the end. There's kind of a cool story behind the story, let's say. So the Oculus Rift virtual reality headsets for consumers started shipping today. And this is very exciting for geeks everywhere, particularly, as I mentioned, because of the story behind the story. The Oculus Rift headsets were not put out there by a big manufacturer. It was actually this guy, Palmer Luckey, who was so obsessed with the notion of virtual reality that he began building his own headsets by hand. And sort of putting it out there and doing, he did a Kickstarter campaign, and eventually the company was bought by Facebook. So he's a real kind of like bootstraps geek guy. And those Kickstarter funders are being rewarded now. So the first units that will be in anybody's hands on this first shipment come from their Kickstarter campaign.
So there have been dev kits for Oculus available for a while. If you saw some installations or museum VR pieces, that was most likely the the dev versions of the Oculus. This is now the consumer edition that we're talking about, which they recently opened up pre-orders for, and of course that sold out very quickly. But even with the HTC Vive and the Sony PlayStation VR coming out this spring, Palmer Luckey is saying it's going to be probably 10 years before there's mass market penetration. So as storytellers, you require an audience, of course, and right now it's still a niche product, but something that's really exciting for all of us, filmmakers and game writers and just storytellers in general. We have a lot of stories about VR on No Film School, including yours, Liz, right?
Yeah, I mean, we talked last week on the show about how there was so much buzz at South by Southwest about VR. And sort of the way I look at it is if you have the will to experiment in this world, it's really exciting. I mean, the likelihood that any of us are going to make money on our films is so small. I wouldn't let the lack of market penetration stop you for now. So one of the interviews I did at South by Southwest, and we just put up on the site last week, was my interview with William Kirkley, the director of Orange Sunshine, and his developers from this company called Master of Shapes, who basically decided to supplement his film about LSD traffickers from the 60s with a virtual reality acid trip component. They actually made it for the HTC Vive. But the article that I did about them goes into real detail about how basically three dudes, indie creators, made a fully immersive VR project. So the technology is out there right now for you to kind of get into this.
Unless, like many filmmakers, you use a Macintosh, and the Oculus Rift currently not available for the Mac because it requires such a powerful computer on the computing side to run that they don't have that version available. So stay tuned. Hopefully that'll be coming out not only for consumption of the content, but for creation eventually.
What a lovely segue into filmmaking tools.
I planned that. So in the world of filmmaking tools this week, a couple of stories. The first is that Frame.io, a application for filmmakers to collaborate on edits remotely over the internet, has announced their Premiere Pro integration. We mentioned a couple weeks ago here on Indie Film Weekly, Whipster.io has been integrated with Vimeo. This is another update in that realm of things getting better for directors and editors to collaborate and give notes back and forth. Frame.io was already integrated with Final Cut Pro 10, but at No Film School, we use Premiere to edit, and we actually use Frame.io to collaborate remotely. Until now, they didn't specifically talk to each other, so what Frame.io has basically done is built an app into a panel within Premiere. So that means that you can share bins of media, import and export directly from there, and get comments from people watching on the Frame.io service and bring those right into Premiere. It's pretty cool. You can scrub within the Frame.io panel and your sequence timeline matches it in the application. So it's just a lot more native integration between looking at notes and making the edits right there in your nonlinear editor. We have a beta at No Film School. We're looking forward to talking about it more. So check that out. That should be available before NAB, which is mid-April. The other news story this week is Atomos is releasing new 4K monitor recorders. What's new about them, the Shogun Flame and Ninja Flame, it sounds like video game moves. What's new about them is that they have HDR. So you may have heard about HDR technology. It's coming to televisions, and services like Netflix and Amazon are experimenting with allowing consumers to watch high dynamic range material. In this case, on the monitoring end of a film set, what often happens is people look at either a Rec. 709 image, which is kind of, for lack of a better term, crappy, but it matches the crappy thing that someone's going to see on their TV, or to watch log footage, which is really desaturated imagery that shows you everything contained, but doesn't actually simulate what a graded image is going to look like. HDR is being touted as a way of sort of giving you a best of both worlds, where you can see more saturation and more contrast while not losing the actual information. So it could be a good monitoring tool. Keep your eye out for when those start shipping later this month. The Shogun is 1700 and the Flame is 1300.
You may want to monitor them. Sorry. I can't resist. So in grant deadlines this week, on April 11th, entries begin for the Sarah Jacobson Film Grant. This grant is only for $2,500 for a couple of film projects, but it's close to my heart and I think close to a lot of other filmmakers' hearts. Sarah Jacobson was a really fierce DIY filmmaker. She used to do the independent film column for Punk Planet, which I read religiously growing up. And so I think this grant has a lot of credibility within the filmmaking community. It's for self-identifying female, trans, genderqueer, and gender nonconforming artists whose work embodies Sarah's fierce DIY values. So, of course, that's right in line with No Film School and Indie Film Weekly as well. Coming up on April 28th is the deadline for the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences Nickel Fellowships in Screenwriting. These are a big deal. It's an international competition open to screenwriters who've not earned more than $5,000 writing for film or television. So let's face it, that's most of us. Entry scripts must be the original work of a sole author or exactly two collaborative authors and written originally in English. They give up to five $30,000 fellowships each year. It's a big deal.
Moving on to the world of festival deadlines, Blow Up, the Chicago International Art House Film Fest, has a deadline of March 31st. They say they welcome serious films aimed at a specific audience rather than a mass market consumer. If that describes yours, check it out, March 31st.
Also on March 31st, the Sound Unseen Festival in the Twin Cities. It focuses on movies with musical themes, and often during the fest, they'll pair a live musical performance with your film, so it's a cool one to check out if you've got a music film.
Same day, last of the month, the Las Vegas Film Festival deadline includes a short film competition prize. That is a $1,000 production grant towards your next film, and it will be distributed by Slap TV.
We've got a few festival deadlines coming up on April 1st. It's not foolish to apply, though. One is the Leeds International Film Festival. It's a qualifying event for both the Academy Awards and the BAFTAs. Plus, they have competitions with prizes, with cash prizes, so those are always worth applying to.
Also on April 1st is the Ojai Film Festival. That is the home of No Film School writer Michael Van Hove, except when he's in L.A. because everyone ends up in L.A.
Well, the festival isn't his home, but he's in Ojai, so if you get into the festival, go say.
I wouldn't be surprised if he made it his home.
Right.
When Micah first started writing for No Film School, he was living in a yurt. I'm not entirely sure how he got Wi-Fi in a dirt yurt. We'll have to ask him that. Anyway, the Ojai Film Festival was started in 2000. And 15 alumni have received Academy Award nominations and two have won an Oscar. So nothing to sneeze at.
Finally, on April 1st deadline is the New Orleans Film Festival. Any excuse to go to New Orleans is a good one. This festival is actually 27 years old. It's also an Oscar qualifier. And Movie Maker Magazine has named it one of the 50 film festivals worth the entry fee several years in a row.
In the world of movies opening, this week on VOD, Born to Be Blue, the Ethan Hawke star about the jazz legend Chet Baker, comes out this Thursday, March 31st. It was a South by Southwest selection, so that's something that just played at a film festival, got really good reviews, and will be available on the VODs.
If you're an Amazon Prime member, keep your eye out for the April 1st release of Cube. It's a German sci-fi film considered to be one of the best sci-fi indies of all time.
And if you're a Netflix subscriber, Entertainment, the Rick Alverson film, is out currently. It is a divisive film. You'll probably know your take on it within the first 5 minutes of it, depending on your sense of humor, but one of the comedy cult hits of 2015.
A bunch of older films are being released on Netflix on April 1st, and we're mentioning these because they're some of our No Film School favorites, kind of indie favorites, not necessarily indie films, but influential to indie makers. Including not the least of 2001 A Space Odyssey and A Clockwork Orange from Stanley Kubrick. We actually just put a piece up on the site today on nofilmschool.com about some rare early advice that he gave to a British newspaper in 1960, early in his career, about filmmaking. Also Best in Show, the amazing indie comedy from Christopher Guest, and Boogie Nights from Paul Thomas Anderson are finally, better late than never, being released on Netflix on April 1st.
In the world of actual physical spaces where you sit with other people,
Miles, what are those?
I think those are called theaters. Miles Ahead is coming out on April 1st. I interviewed the director of photography, Roberto Schaefer, at Sundance, so check No Film School for that podcast. That is a limited release, so it might be expanding to your city soon. Don Cheadle is great in it. And also, Everybody Wants Some, the South by Southwest opening film by Austin legend Richard Linklater.
So before we sign off this week, I wanted to mention something that I've been thinking about all weekend long and wanted to share with you all. I recently learned about an aspiring filmmaker, 21 years old, named Varnell Pritchett. He's a student of a friend of mine who was recently diagnosed with stage 4 angiosarcoma. So he's taken a break from graduate film school to take care of his health. And during that period, through various friends of friends and this former professor who I mentioned, Varnell was able to hook up with his filmmaking hero, Ryan Coogler, who directed Fruitvale Station and Creed. And Coogler was kind enough to take some time a couple nights in a row to Skype with Varnell and give him filmmaking advice. And Varnell was absolutely determined to make his short film script. And it was kind of what was getting him through the tough treatments. I learned yesterday that Varnell passed away over the weekend. And I mention this because it was just such a wake-up call that as a filmmaker and as filmmakers, two things really. Life is short, and if we have the opportunity to mentor young filmmakers and reach out and provide advice and guidance to those coming up, we should. And if we have any opportunity to make our own work, we should. So life's short, and get out there and get to work, guys.
Thank you, as always, for joining us on Indie Film Weekly. We'll have a new show for you next week. You can find us on iTunes, Pocket Casts, Overcasts, and on nofilmschool.com. Thanks for listening.